Hi everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we are ending our month of spooky, ooky, Halloween-y material by watching The Blob. This is the remake from the 80s, I believe, and it is a body horror, monster, crawly, awesome nonsense. I don't know why I hadn't seen this before. I had a hell of a lot of fun. I truly did. And in many ways, ironically enough, it is very similar to Killer Clowns from Outer Space, right down to the cops who don't believe anything and arrest the wrong dude. It's like a grittier version of Killer Clowns, which is a very stupid thing I just said. In the meantime, thanks for listening, subscribing, sharing, and doing all those things that you do. And if you want additional content, including our teased episode on Adam's Family Values, consider joining the Patreon, patreon.com/myopiamovies. Excuse me, patreon.com/myopia. We are Myopia Movies. Thanks, guys.
This week on Myopia Movies, we continue our horror month theme, watching 1988's The Blob, the prequel to The Mask.
Same director.
Yes.
I'm Nick Hoffman, of Myopia, and Riffer on Cineprov, and on panel we have...
Adam.
Hello, this is Daniel, frequent contributor to popdose.com, and I do beware of The Blob because it creeps and it leaps.
Jeremy.
So as we're here, he has done, this guy, Chuck Russell, has done a future episode, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors.
The best one.
Previous episode, The Mask.
Yep.
Previous episode, The Scorpion King.
Oh, he did The Scorpion King?
He directed The Scorpion King.
I love
King.
This man. And then he disappeared.
And stay tuned for Eraser.
Oh, yeah, he did do that.
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Arnold Schwarzenegger, mm-hmm. Where he fights an alligator, which is great.
This is a great director.
He's definitely a director.
You know who co-wrote this, though, was Frank Darabont, the guy who directed Shawshank Redemption.
That's yep. Right.
Frank Darabont.
So this is the remake from 1988. The first one is kind of about the creeping communism. Right, I mean that's what it is. Like yeah. This one is much more maybe fear of government, fear of cops, fear of the military,
fear of strawberry jams.
But this is what I imagine all of our moms thought of when we got those sticky hands. Right, like yeah. it's creeping and it's gonna get everywhere. Because this stuff is really just Nickelodeon's gack that eats people.
Yep. Slime in a can.
In a very, very graphic way.
Dude, oh, yeah. There are some world-class just gooings in this movie. Gooings on.
Acidic goo.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And we'll get to a hearty handshake that someone won't forget, that Shawnee Smith will never forget. But, Adam, you suggested this movie. Why don't you give us a plot synopsis?
I did. So basically, a meteorite lands in a small town. I don't know where this small town is, but it's a small town.
It's a skiing town, I believe they say. They're waiting for winter when tourism picks up.
Yep, small town. So what's believed to be an alien meteorite hits there. A homeless man stumbles upon it one night, and it opens up and reveals a blob, an amorphous pink-colored, bright-colored blob, that is not only acidic, but plans on eating the small town one by one. It kind of creeps its way through the sewers, eats everybody one by one, sort of gets larger every time it eats a new person, and there's your movie right there. It's really all you need.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. That,
yeah. That's your plot.
It's about a blob.
A blob eating a small town. Remake of the 50s film with Steve McQueen.
Which, you know, you have to see because there's only, like, 10 Steve McQueen movies?
Ah, yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
It's a shame. This one stars Shawnee Smith.
Amanda from Saw.
Amanda from Saw. She's I wouldn't call her love interest, but she's in Decker. She's also in an episode of X-Files.
Becker.
She's the 80s cheerleader homecoming queen figure.
Yes.
Yep.
She's in a lot of stuff. If you saw a picture, you'd recognize her. But yeah, most famously, I think Amanda, probably nowadays in the horror pack, starring Kevin Dillon.
Matt Dillon's way more talented brother.
I don't know. Entourage didn't age well.
No, it did not.
I mean, it didn't age well after its first episode.
Yeah. fair point. Playing your leather jacket bad boy on a bike.
Yeah, I mean, The Lost Boys is about to break out.
It already had been released by this point. That was 87. This is 88.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just talking about losers on bikes and leather jackets and anyway.
And 80s mullets and...
Yeah.
So many glorious 80s mullets in this movie.
Oh, God, yes.
other people of note, we have a weird pharmacist, played by Art LaFleur, who's in every third movie, including this season, with First Kid. He plays the head of this Secret Service.
Great character actor.
Yep.
The Tooth Fairy in the Santa Claus sequels.
I mean, again, he just plays a gruff motherfucker.
Not only did you see the Santa Claus, but you saw the sequels?
I'm sorry. I'm a young guy, you know?
I think previous episode of the Santa Claus, but is that the third one where he's fighting Jack Frost?
The third one? Martin Short?
Yeah. Martin Short. They just found him in a dumpster somewhere. Martin, you want to be in a movie? And starring... Del Close, who I know who he is, you might know who he is, the founder of Second City and American Improv.
I didn't know that.
Inventor of most games and the phrase yes and. Del Close played the pervy priest.
Are you serious?
That's Del Close. Yeah.
He was awesome as Reverend Meeker. Reverend Meeker, one of the best characters.
We're forgetting two other big names in this movie. First is Candy Clark, who was the waitress at the diner that eventually gets eaten in the phone booth.
Oh, yeah. That's a great death.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Jack Nance is the town doctor.
Jack Nance also. I mean, it's just... Yeah. It's a weirdly packed cast for a small movie.
I don't know these actors' names, but also the guy who gets hit with toxic waste in RoboCop.
Oh, yes.
He's one of the cops. And then the sheriff, I believe, is Dale from The Walking Dead. So...
Yeah, Jeffrey DeMond.
Yes. Yeah. Frank Darabont regular, if you know. He's in a lot of Frank Darabont stuff.
Yeah, including Green Mile, which is Frank Darabont, I think. He's also in that 2007 The Mist movie, which is...
Frank Darabont.
And it's okay.
We should get into this movie, though, because we can recite the cast all day, which is filled with great character actors. But one of the big things about this that makes it work, along with The Thing and The Fly remakes, is those original movies were all, like, cheesy... horror movies about communism and about how the world was changing. The whole of the 80s was the Back to the Future Morning in America thing, right? Like Reagan looking back and saying we need to recreate the 50s because that's when America was great.
Yeah.
And everyone was responding, no, it really wasn't. And that's what this movie's doing, is subverting all the tropes that the original movie had.
Yeah, I really like the... It makes it seem like Shawnee Smith's sort of jock boyfriend in this movie was going to be the Steve McQueen hero character. He quickly dies in the first 20 minutes of the movie, and the bad boy on the leather jacket, Kevin Dillon, becomes sort of your hero of the movie, if you will.
Yeah. Who is constantly being pulled over, and like at one point the RoboCop guy is like, it's the RoboCop guy, right?
Yeah.
He pulls him over, is like, hey, next year you're going to be 18. That means if you do something wrong again, you're going to real jail.
Going to the big leagues, son. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess in the 80s, like you were saying, they decided to just remake 50s movies and kind of retool their stories. I mean, everybody talks about The Fly and The Thing, but nobody really mentions The Blob. And I know this movie was somewhat of a box office bomb when it came out, but I love it. It's got a cult following.
Well, and speaking of The Fly, it's the same cinematographer as The Fly. This guy worked with Cronenberg, and that's where we get those cool body effects, which this movie's defined by. It is. He's the same guy who did Videodrome and stuff. So,
hell yeah.
And again, The Fly and Dead Zone and like this kind of body stuff, because this movie has... People are exploding with goo. They're dissolving. One of the most horrifying effects is when they're in this hospital scene. The boyfriend character you alluded to has his face like he's trying to push his way out of the blob as it's dissolving him. It looks, I mean...
You can hear him screaming until his vocal cords like literally dissolve.
Well, previous episode, but it reminds me of the Abyss tendril, kind of, like, because you just see that face peering out of it, or the T-1000 from Terminator 2. Like, it just has this horrifying, almost human quality to it. Do they lean into?
That slowly disappears as, you know, his face melts, so there's nothing but, like, a bloody skull.
This movie is disgusting in the best possible way.
Yeah, it is. Totally.
The gore effects are so amazing.
All right, let's get into this. So, smash cut. Hobo poking stuff with a stick.
Well, the first smash cut is a football game with local high schoolers, including... guys who want to egg quarterback on to ask cheerleader out. And that's how we're introduced to our first two, well, one of our main characters. Like Adam said, the other one dies in the first 20 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah, they make it seem like he's going to be your hero, though.
Yeah, because he's, you know, he's the kind of guy who in the 1950s movie would survive. He's the clean cut. He's not an asshole. He's not drinking, right? He gets in trouble with the pharmacist, kind of, because he's buying condoms for his pervy friend.
Yeah, no, it's the other way around. The pervy friend is buying condoms and says he's buying them for quarterback.
That's right.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
that's right.
Great gag.
It's a good gag. And then it turns out to be the dad later, which is a funny gag, too.
Ribbed.
I almost spit my cereal this morning watching that movie because of that.
I will say, and then the priest is there too. It's just like the whole plot shows up to make him feel good. Some good Catholic guilt right at the beginning. We're off to the
races.
They're
not for me. I insisted that he use protection, but...
That's so funny. Anyway, we're also introduced to... a homeless guy who will come back later. We have Kevin Dillon on his bike trying to jump the gorge, screws up, and just falls down it. Yeah.
He wipes out.
And the homeless guy's just there, like, picking up cans.
He's literally credited as Can Man.
He is.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Like in The Stand, then, a trash can man. And here we got Can Man.
Can Man, exactly.
There you go. I mean, one of the big things about this opening is they show the main street of this town, and it's utterly decaying. Which is a great, you know, subversion of the whole 50s motif about a small town Americana. It's like, well,
mommy, mainstream USA doesn't exist anymore.
Well, wasn't there a huge economic bust in the 80s?
Yes, there was.
In the early 80s, yeah. Plus, this town's apparently dependent on tourism that happens in the winter, and this is clearly not the winter.
Well, no, I mean, this is ladies. This is SNL crisis, Reagan. You gotta be very specific about your Reagan economic crisis. There were several. This is, you know, I mean, even down to the greaser with the motorcycle and the leather jacket. Like, it feels like the bad guy out of a 1950s movie.
Yep,
right.
He would be your villain, yeah.
And so we established this town. You know, we have, you know, date night in the big city. We have... You know, all the locals, we have the local diners established early on with the sheriff who's in love with the waitress.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this has all of the small town check marks.
Yeah.
It is. It's Twin Peaksy. We see homeless man roasting something over a fire from a bindle and crushing cans. And then we see this meteor crash.
Presumably alien meteor. Yeah.
It cracks open. And we have this kind of great backlit, like, his face is glowing against the forest. And there's just some pink goo, like, in this cracked shell.
He picks it up with a stick.
He pokes it with a stick, which is the appropriate response to something you've never seen before. Like a corpse. And you just start poking it.
Yeah.
You can't but stop.
In this case, it devours his hand, and he's, like, in horrifying pain. And then... runs out into the middle of the highway and tries to chop his hand off, and the blob just goes over the wound.
That's awesome.
And then he gets hit by a car, right? He gets hit by a date night car.
Right? I believe so.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's what gets us into town.
Yep,
right, because Amanda from Saw and the QB are out on their date. And
somehow Kevin Dillon on his motorcycle bumps into them both, and they all end up going to the hospital together. To save this old homeless man.
We are at now, even with the two G's, we are essentially watching The Stand unfold, which is great. If they had made The Stand when the book came out, it'd be so much better than this nonsense they're trying to do with Matthew McConaughey and Idris Elba.
Mm.
That movie was terrible.
The Dark Tower?
Yeah.
Oh God, that was bad.
It just. They've
been trying that to Matthew Quinn.
I know Matt loves it, but like they've been trying to make those forever, and it's just. Lost King is you can't turn it directly into a movie anyway.
No.
I remember liking the Stand miniseries.
The one that was like in the 90s?
The
like
early 90s, yeah.
That was okay. It's 1,600-page book. You're not going to get it on the screen. Anyway, that's not neither here nor there, though Kevin Dillon would have been a good Randall Flagg.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so what we're, like, when Kevin Dillon essentially startles them, so they swerve into this homeless guy, essentially is what's happening. Brian, like, surprises them, so they aren't paying attention with the car. Or no, he's chasing the homeless man, because he hears the thing, he finds the homeless guy screaming, they run out of the woods into the traffic.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's how Kevin Dillon comes into it.
Right. And so Shawnee Smith and it's Paul, right? It's Megan Paul.
Yeah.
Paul. They decide to bring the homeless man to the hospital, even though clearly no one cares. It's the most blasé hospital since Halloween 2.
Honestly, but it's a slight commentary on the healthcare system and health insurance. So
that's true.
I did enjoy Jack Nance's doctor in this moment when the guy's clearly dying, and then he's like asking, "Doctor, come quick. I'm with a patient
Excuse
who
me.
Has insurance."
You are so rude right now. But essentially, it's like, you know, his hand is dissolving. No one understands until things start happening. People start dying. No one cares. Like, this is the most... This town is so, like, uninterested with what's going on. Because the homeless man is only hit with a car. He has goo on his hand. He's engooed. But, like... The nurse doesn't even get up. Like, and then, like, you know, should we do anything? Should we fill out any paperwork? This is our... whatever. And eventually they're in the next room filling out something, and she's like, "Great day." And she's like, "What the fuck is this movie?" Meanwhile, off in the corner, this homeless man's life is ending, and we have no idea. It's great.
Up until, you know, Paul goes in and checks on him, and then sees, like, his eyes rolling back and his throat... convulsing. It's kind of weird in that moment. It's kind of hard to describe, but he's dying.
Yeah, the blob is running through his body at this point.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We should also mention at this point too, there's a deputy named Bill. He's the RoboCop guy that we mentioned
Deputy
before.
Bill. Yeah.
And Emil. I looked up his character's name from RoboCop.
Yes.
And Fame. Paul, and Fame. He's very good in Fame.
Yes. His name is Paul McCrane. And he is in Fame. He's in RoboCop.
Who was he in Fame?
He was the actor, the closeted homosexual actor in Fame.
Oh, the one that the one of the lead characters teases by dressing up in drag?
Yes, that would be him.
And for those of you who watch...
In one of the gayest movies, someone gets ridiculed for being gay.
I know, right? A gay guy in theater? What? Yeah.
It took a lot of effort, but they found a way.
Yeah.
Science said they could, but should they? And for those of you who watched it in the 90s, he was on ER... for nigh on 10 years. So,
oh, there you go.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So that's where probably most of our parents know him from.
Yeah.
But anyway, they have at one point or another arrested Brian, and they're harassing him. The sheriff and the deputy.
The homeless man dies, and then Paul, in one of the most famous scenes in the movie, is devoured by the blob.
Great scene.
Yeah, it was a great scene. Like,
it creeps up onto the ceiling.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and we got to do these establishing shots because the blob does not look particularly interesting. So to make it look interesting, they do crazy things with the because it's just pink goo, right?
Yeah, it is.
So he's staring at the paper, and then all of a sudden, like, there's drips. And he looks up, and someone drops a wad of gum on his face. But like, there was literally... I'm sure it's like a best... It's no one. It's an assistant to a PA. Just let's go. And this thing goes, boink.
And, like, falls on him. And then Meg follows him in, though, and that's when he's covered in the blob, screaming and dissolving.
And he's dissolving, and we see his face pressed up. And then we kind of suddenly start getting what the blob is going to do. Then, like every good horror movie, there's a montage of deaths.
Oh, yeah. That takes a break from the plot, literally just kills off characters.
Well, that's why Brian was arrested, though, is because they wanted to somehow pin the homeless man dying on him.
Well, because it's so funny, it makes no sense, but no one wants Brian there. Meg is being polite, but no one really wants him there, so he just leaves, and therefore... When everyone shows up dead, they're like, "Hey, a drifter." Like, that's the plot. Like, and by this point, he clearly should have left town, and he wants to leave town. And
yeah.
Meg pulls him back at some point, but you know what? He was almost smart enough to leave the horror movie. I mean, he does survive. He makes it.
He does.
Spoilers. But, like, it's so rare in a horror movie where someone's like, "I should just leave."
Whatever. You don't need me anyways. At this point, the movie is still trying to make you think, okay... bad boy with a leather jacket left. Paul is still in the hospital. He's the one trying to get the doctor's attention. He's the one trying to make the call, and then the blob jumps on him, and he's dead about 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
It's great. I no notes. Like, that is so much fun. At this point, too, we then have the blob escapes, and we have all the people we were established earlier are about to die.
Yep. So the next big kill is with the couple on Lover's Lane where the woman passes out.
We need to establish this. There's Nobody Face and Perv Man. And Nobody Face is a little bit too drunk because of this drink.
You didn't recognize her?
I do not. Who is she?
Who is she?
She was...
she was from Baywatch. Who cares?
She was in Under Siege as the female lead that jumps out of the cake in that one scene.
Under Siege.
Is she really?
Pretty sure.
Oh. That's fair her claim enough, to no. fame. Yeah.
The woman from Playboy... Well, the one in the original Under Siege is in a Playboy model, I think. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure she is, but...
Anyway, so...
Vicky... Erica...
Eleniac. Erica Eleniac. Yes, she is in Under Siege, and she's in the Beverly Hillbillies and E.T. And she is, of course, in Baywatch, as you alluded to. Okay, yeah. So...
how did you know she was in Baywatch, Jeremy?
I am a big fan of the career of David Hasselhoff.
There you go.
Fair enough. Knight Rider, a musical...
David also, Hasselhoff. I will say, he has the best cameo in the first SpongeBob movie. He is so freaking funny in that SpongeBob movie.
He's great.
He's funny. He's very funny. And he has one of the best drunk tapes of all time.
Oh, with him...
the burger.
Yeah, the burger.
He's like... drunk on the floor just eating a cheeseburger. And we've all eaten cheeseburgers. College. But he's just, sometimes a cheeseburger is the best food you could have.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
Well, anyway, during this scene with this couple, they're not eating cheeseburgers drunk, but the guy, who's the same guy that lied about who he was buying condoms for,
yeah.
In the pharmacy, tries to make a daiquiri or something for his date.
No, this is... Okay, so let me paint you the scene. They're at Lover's Lane. They're at Makeout Point. They're at...
Very 1950s.
Very 1950s. They're pulled up to what I assume is an abyss. And they're looking off into the void. And it's romantic, as it would be. They're drinking glasses, because this guy keeps it rapey and he keeps it classy, of what looks like Hawaiian punch and vodka. A classic concoction. And her drink is looking a little low. Does that mean he has a bottle of Hawaiian punch and a bottle of vodka? Sure does. And it's in his trunk in a pretty high-quality looking liquor cabinet that he has built into the trunk of this car.
I believe there's pink lighting.
There's mood lighting.
It's mood lighting.
There are umbrellas. There's stuff afoot. The other thing you need to know is Erica Eleniac, around her neck, has his class ring. Mm-hmm. We see a box of class rings in the trunk because this is a plan. He has laid this pipe before. So he mixes the drink. He doesn't put anything into it. But by the time he gets back, she is passed out drunk.
Isn't there a POV There's a shot where you see the blob going up to the car.
The blob goes up to the car. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, best we know she's fine. Because we, like, unlike the first kill, where it's, like, messing around with, like, the guy's throat, or the second kill where it's covering it, we don't really know what's happened. And I think the way it's established, it could just be hiding in a footwell. Right?
Yeah, right.
So he gets in the car next to her, she is passed out, so he decides now's the time to cop a feel. Like, this is a really uncomfortable, awkward scene, which means he has to die. Pretty much.
He's
dead. And
right
then
now.
She explodes.
Well, I mean, we talk about an uncomfortable, awkward scene. He unbuttons her blouse and tries to feel her up.
And stick his hand in her shirt. And then she explodes.
Yeah.
The blob literally comes through every orifice in her body and tries to grab him.
And if you've ever seen the poster, which is like a pink scene with a court with like a body screaming, that scene doesn't appear in the movie. What happens to her looks like the poster from The Stuff, right? Which is coming out every orifice of that's what it looks like. She just explodes out, and it's a rubber dummy, and they're just pumping this goo through, so it's distorted.
God, yeah.
And it's great. It's so good.
It's nasty and amazing.
and then the blob is just done with them. So it walks away, and you just see the ring embedded in it.
Well, it walks away, but...
it goos away. I don't know how to tell. It rolls across the plate, and there's, like, grass and shit in it. It's disgusting.
I love that they established that almost everything it touches is inside of it. I love that.
Yes. And and apparently it can digest things like denim, but not the class rate, which is great. Because, again, like, I can't emphasize enough how... on top of everything else, this was made in exactly 1988. So there's sweaters for no reason. There's mullets. And it's not a leather jacket. It's not something Arnie would wear in a Terminator movie. This is a leather jacket with lapels, and it is massive. It is so great. This movie exists in exactly 1 year, and that's 1988.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
It's so good.
It's a time capsule of a movie.
And like you said, it was unfortunately kind of a flop because they should have made like 8 of these.
Oh God. Well, they set it up for a sequel. We'll get to that. But the movie had a $10 million budget, only made $8.2 million. So they're like, well, no sequel for you. So it's a shame though.
And it's a TriStar movie. Like they should have just given it another one. Like it's not like TriStar. What are they doing? Come on.
I don't understand. I don't know if it was the marketing, but it might have to do with, it wasn't as successful as like The Fly or The Thing, which were the other two big 80s horror remakes.
Well, The Thing was a bomb when it was released.
Oh, you're right. The Thing was a bomb. So The Fly was really the kind of only sort of successful one. It didn't have any big names attached. I think The Blob probably didn't succeed because there were no really big names at the time attached to this movie.
That makes sense. They were expecting the IP to coast the movie along. Anyway, though, after Mr. Creep and Blonde Girl die... we get a scene where Meg is trying to meet up with Brian after this long monologue from Emil about Flag's alcoholic mother.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that was something. Like, because again, we have this scene where the cops are just harassing this guy, and they're not playing good cop, bad cop. They're playing bad cop and asshole cop.
Yep.
And they're just like, it's because your mom's an alcoholic, isn't it? And you're just like, what?
Why?
And they're like, and literally he throws him up against the wall, and you're just... Okay, I guess you're the bad guy.
Flag responds by licking him.
Yes! Which...
Sexy.
Great.
It's great.
Which, I mean, you got to look at it in context. This was during the 80s and the AIDS crisis. So him licking him was probably the response he knew would get him to back the fuck off.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. But it's also very, like... And your move, deputy. Like, what's next? The sheriff makes him put him down. But at this point, we start getting Blob sightings, sort of. Like, other people start dying.
The next thing that happens is Meg goes to Brian's like, I saw Paul die. And Brian's just like, no. All I saw was some homeless dude. And I don't want anything to do with this. So he goes to the diner that Candy Clark works at and, like, orders a sandwich or something. And the sink at the diner is backed up in the kitchen.
Great kill.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's so funny because the waitress is trying to go at it with this, like, a plunger, right? And, you know, the bar back's like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Puts his hand in the drain.
Puts his hand in the drain. It's just, it's so gross.
Oh, we get the blob.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is a great gory kill where the blob springs out of the sink, drags the... guy's head in and the head gets crushed in the drain.
Oh yeah, this guy gets pulled through a small drain hole and it is truly amazing. It is special effects at its finest.
We see the pipes like expand to fit him.
Exploding yeah. Blood.
I mean, it is funny because it isn't this, but it's almost Freddy Krueger deaths because yeah. They're almost funny, right? Because again, like that's a Freddy Krueger bit that the pipes expand so that he can fit in it,
yeah.
Right?
Like, I laugh at that shit, but I'm fucked up, so, you know.
No, but it is. It is... We also, I guess, should stop here. There's a chase, right? Like, it pursues the guy to the deep freeze for a second, but the blob retreats, but it leaves behind these crystals, which the priest finds later.
Later on, yeah. Right, well, Candy Clark tries to escape through the alley behind the restaurant, whereas Brian and Meg go into the freezer.
Right.
Yep. Where you, of course, find the weakness of the blob, which is cold temperatures, much like the old film.
Right. Yeah. Candy Clark, well, at this point, sort of gets away. We'll get to her in a minute.
I liked the gag, though, by the way, where Kevin Dillon comes out of the freezer with a hook ready to fight the blob off if it's still out there, and he hits a can of strawberry jam, and he's like, it looks like I killed the strawberry jam, and they used strawberry jam for the old blob movie.
That's funny.
It's a nice little homage.
It's the right tone for this movie, which is silly.
Yeah.
I mean, the kills are gruesome, but if you don't have some levity in there, it becomes Zack Snyder, right? Like,
yeah.
Because this is a movie where the government is evil, everyone's evil, the blob is unkillable for most of it. They figure it out later, of course. But it's got a very dark bit to it. So, like the 80s comedy or 80s horror that it was, they add some jokes, which helps. It really does.
Big time.
Listen, again, we'll get on this, but a lot of the modern horror movies are all dark all the time and makes them much harder to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who is it? Eventually, wait, so at this point, Fran dies too, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's where we get the scene of Candy Clark in the phone booth trying to call the sheriff, and he's like, oh, he already went to the diner, and then she sees the blob around the phone booth, and he's already in the blob.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I love that. Well, first of all, I love that the sheriff dies off screen, and then you find him inside the blob just completely
floating there, and his eye like floats away.
Oh yeah, he's completely going away. But that's my favorite kill in the movie, because at this point you're in a phone booth, completely surrounded by the blob. You just got to accept your fate at that point.
You know, at that point I did half expect Candy Clark to call someone and be like, "I need the biggest seed bell you have."
It's such a cartoony death, and it's almost so a Doctor Who joke.
Because like dummy in a phone booth,
she fucking explodes,
right? Just,
yeah,
it's so good, like. The deaths in this movie are amazing. I don't know. Again, maybe it's just that the guy worked with Cronenberg for a while, but you filmed these people being turned inside out,
yeah,
sucked through pipes, like ensued.
Well, the Freddy Krueger vet, so that would probably explain it.
It does. Yeah, we have a guy who directed both the great Freddy Krueger and who filmed for Cronenberg. Although I do realize by saying film Freddy Krueger, it sounds like he's doing a biopic. I want to get to know Freddy! And you're just...
That's pretty good.
Thanks. But yeah, the one person we really haven't talked enough about yet is Reverend. The Reverend.
Oh boy. Well, we're only introduced to him, I think, maybe one time where he's in the pharmacy.
Yeah, a couple times. It seems weird that a sequel is set up for him because he's pretty peripheral in this.
He is.
At the start, especially. I mean, he's a fairly normal small town reverend.
And whenever we have a town scene, he's there. Like, he's at the football game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He's at the pharmacy, but.
Yep.
Oh, I think he's only at the football game, so we can set up that joke later. The idea that you're buying condoms in front of a priest is funny. That's funny.
Yeah.
But then he's just walking down the street with a bottle of wine because, you know, Catholic, I get it. But
was he?
No, he's not. He's not. Yeah, but okay. He's wearing a Roman collar. It's an easy joke to have a priest with a bottle of wine.
There you go.
But he walks past the diner, and the doors have been blown open, and the because essentially you have a door, and then you have a glass door, and the glass door has been shattered. So he steps in, he's like, "Hello? Is anyone in here? Fuck you." Like, of course something horrible has happened. Just call the police. Just the first thing you do is call the police. But he's like, "I must investigate what's going on." And it is utter devastation. And the thing about the blob, which is kind of a cool idea, is there's not a lot of... There are corpses left behind. So people are just gone, with the exception of the hand. We didn't really talk about it.
Yeah.
But boyfriend, she reaches in to try to save boyfriend by pulling him out of the blob, and she just pulls his hand off.
We do get a couple bodies throughout the movie. There's a big one later in the movie theater scene.
That's true.
After this.
And the homeless guy, when they lift up the sheet, is half dissolved. Like, right. His top half is still there.
And yet the blob completely consumes people entirely at some points in the movie, so it's a little inconsistent.
Hey, he was just starting out at the beginning. Only had half a body. You know?
That's right. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. Bit off more than he could chew.
Yeah, doesn't have the appetite for it, you know. Yeah.
I also like it later, we'll get there, but it's essentially supposed to be like just one bacteria, like one giant goo.
Yeah.
Yep. So I just like the idea, because what someone must have watched is like one of those like biology films in like 10th grade that was horribly animated. And the cell absorbs it and explodes. And you just see like a little boop, boop, boop. Because that's what just happens in this. Like, he just sucks the guy in and just leaves a floating cowboy hat. Like, that's all. That's what this movie is. I don't know. So.
Well, after the scene with the priest in the restaurant, where I believe this is where he picked up some of the frozen bits.
Yeah, so when it freezes, it looks like the inside of a geode. It's like these little purpley pink crystal things that he puts inside of a mason jar that he finds.
Yep. Perfectly cut crystals.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then Meg and Brian go to the police station to say, holy hell, we don't know what's going on, but more people are dead. Where's the sheriff? Or where's the deputy? Because at this point, the sheriff's gone.
Right.
And they go, well, he's gone back towards the where the meteor was. And at this point, the rest of the plot shows up.
Big twist.
They go back out to where the meteor was, and the government be there.
Yeah, there's a doctor. I think it's Dr. Meadows. Does that sound right?
I think Meadows, so, Dr. Yeah. Meadows, yeah.
But, I mean, again, this is a scene out of Contagion or Hot Zone or something, because they're wearing spacesuits, and they're the friendly government. And I think he says he's CDC at first. Turns out that's a lie. He's working for vague yet menacing government agency. I don't know. I don't know. It's you know.
Well, let's go ahead. He's working for the man.
The man.
The man.
Let's go ahead and say what the twist is at this point. In this version of the Blob, it was a biological warfare experiment that got out of hand.
Which,
I believe Dr. Meadows is meant to be a member of the army who's responding to it to try and keep it covered up.
Well, because if I recall, the bit is it was so dangerous, they launched it into space.
Yeah.
And it was never supposed to come back to Earth. And Meadows has this hard-on about, like, look how lethal it is.
Yeah.
If only we could trap it, we could use it in Moscow, or whatever he says.
Yeah. It was this thing that they wanted to use as, like, a weapon against other countries in war. They were going to have the Blob basically devour other countries as a form of weapon and to have control. But I like the shot where they pull the meteor up, and we thought it was this alien meteor, and then you see the bottom of the meteor, and it's like this government spacecraft.
And it's, it has, like, an American flag on it. Yeah. It's very on the nose. But it's totally fine. Like it makes it all the sillier. Because especially since at first Dr. Meadows is like, we're just making sure no one's getting hurt. We're trying to figure out what's going on, and we're gonna catch it. And then later he's like rubbing his hands together. And there's like, oh, shouldn't we try to destroy it? No, we can use it again. Just like what a fresh elephant.
Shouldn't we try to save these people? No. They're expendable.
That's a
great line.
Yeah. And he's doing the serial killer kind of staring off into the middle distance. It's so like Dr. Frankenstein.
Oh God,
it's choice.
He's obsessed with this Blob creature. I like when horror remakes take a solid twist from the original source material, and this is a nice twist. I think man-made Blob is a nice twist.
In the original, they never explained where the Blob came from.
No.
At all. It's like a killer clown from outer space.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Yeah, killer goo from outer space.
And it's fine. It's so good. I love this. The last group we haven't set up yet are these two toe-headed pricks. These little kids.
Oh, the kids.
The precocious little kids.
Sneak into the Jason knockoff movie.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant.
I believe they say it's Garden Tools Massacre is the movie they signed.
Yep. Hockey Mask Killer, yep.
But the mom is like, no, I don't want you going out to see any horror movies.
Yeah.
I also love the guy up front of them, this redneck guy who's like telling his girlfriend Debbie or whatever's going on, like, oh, look, he's gonna kill her!
That guy in the movie theater, that loud guy.
It's so great. And the kids are the ones telling him to shut up. It's so funny. It's so good.
Did you guys actually listen to the dialogue in this fake movie that they're watching? It's great.
Please,
like,
give it to us.
Oh, there's this great scene where he's like, wait, why is he trimming the hedges this late at night? And then all of a sudden the guy's like, wait. He sees the hockey mask. He's like, wait, hockey season ended months ago.
That's right.
Choice line. Oh, so choice.
So great.
And the Blob comes out the screen and out the projection booth and out of everywhere.
Which happened in the classic 50s movie when it devours the movie theater.
Yes. Although in this case, it's done a lot better, I think.
Way better.
I mean, just first and foremost, because they set up the Blob in the theater, it kills the projectionist and then kills the theater manager and then starts slowly leaking out. And what happens is the kids turn around to yell at that loud, rednecky guy again about talking during the movie, and he's being devoured by the Blob.
Well, and it's cool because imagine if I remembered anything. No, if you remember the original, it like eats the film, right? Like the film kind of splits and they turn around to see what's happening and the Blob is there. I like that they're treating this guy like an asshole. Like, these kids are such pricks, and it's one, I mean, the guy's an asshole too, but it's just, they turn around and there's this tidal wave of goo.
It's great.
And it's cool because there are camera tricks here. There are some. It's not digital effects. It's just a lot of layering, of course. But it's practical. Like, you see a lot of goo. There's it's a lot beautiful. Of good miniature work in this.
Yep.
A lot of forced perspective. It's just kind of cool that, like...
This is also where we get a corpse in the movie where someone's half dissolved on the theater floor. And then when Meg and Brian show up to find her younger brother, who's one of these two kids, they roll them over and then half their face is melted.
It's gooed into the floor.
Yeah.
So it's only slightly stickier than the average floor in a movie theater.
Only slightly, yeah.
That was like a grandfather joke. I'm so sorry. But yeah, so at this point, the blob is not only massive, it's dissolved dozens of people. So the kind of metaphor here is it grows as it consumes. So the more people, the film doesn't even need to say it. It just gets bigger each time.
It creeps, it leaps.
It creeps, yeah. It leaps. The movie theater scene kind of leads us to the final confrontation, because at this point, the military is surrounding the town.
Well, the Meg and the two kids escape into the sewers.
We can't take away the fact that this movie had the balls to show a child get consumed by an a blob.
And it was... we didn't just see a child die. We saw a child slowly dissolving.
Yeah.
And I will say, too, it's that whole... It's the Simpsons joke where they the faculty is eating the kids, and they're like, I'm sure the three of us are making it because of... And then Milhouse dies, and they're just like, well, I assume the two Simpsons kids are going to make it. Like, because you assume every... Like, our main characters are going to make it, but they keep dying. You're not going to kill a kid, are you? Nope, they're dead. The sheriff is going to save the day. Nope, he's dead. Who's left? Because remember, at this point, too, the military... when they take the people back to town, they actually have this kind of paddy wagon almost that Brian is in along with...
Brian is in there because he saw them recover the quote-unquote meteor, and so the army captured him, and they're lying about how he's been contaminated by some alien virus.
Really, he just saw too much.
Right.
Yeah.
But him and Meg are in the back of this thing as well. Like, and he's like, look, let's just leave the movie. We can leave the movie. The movie can be done now. What's happening now could be happening now. And she's like, no, I have to go back and save my brother and my family, yada, yada. And it's like, I don't have anyone I care about. I literally could be leaving.
He does.
So he does. And at this point, Meg is with the kid. Is Kevin? Is that the name of the kid?
Kevin, yeah.
His friend is dead. They're going through the sewers, and he's trying, but... Like, Brian is gone at this point, which is kind of funny.
For the third time, Brian pieces out.
He tries to leave this movie so hard.
So he's like, fuck, I gotta go back. There's people in trouble.
Meg runs into a couple of army people who are in the sewer with him, and the blob starts killing them.
Like, thank God those army people were there, or else, like, Shawnee Smith would not have made it through this movie.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And let's be clear. They weren't there to help her. They were there to wrap, like, because Dr. Meadows thinks that, like, there's, like, it's nonsense, but there's like four cutoffs to the whole water supply in town. So they're trying to trap the blob in the largest sewer I've seen since the Ninja Turtles. that's the idea. Like, they're like, okay, so the military is going in to lock it down. And Shawnee Smith is like, oh, you're here to help us. And they are absolutely not there to help them at all. It's great.
I love that people shoot at this thing with bullets thinking it will do something. It's great.
It's the American solution. I love during the scene where Shawnee Smith and Kevin are trying to escape. They try and climb up the ladder, but then Dr. Meadows, I think, is the guy who puts a manhole over the top.
And then he parks the car over it.
Yeah.
Well, and I will say, we're almost to it, but you, because of this movie and because it's government conspiracy and I was raised on the X-Files, you almost expect the bad guys to kind of get away with it. And he doesn't get away with it. He also dies horribly.
Well, yes. conveniently, these government scientists, whatever guys, are carrying rocket launchers on their backs.
So again, that's the American solution.
Yes.
And by the way, they handle them about as well as the kids do in JoJo Rabbit. It's so... Like, they're just bumbling around with these...
Isn't that how the Reverend gets burned? It's because one of them's got a flamethrower and the blob kills it.
Yeah. He flames. He like somehow like blocks the hole of the flamethrower, and then the guy bursts into flames, and then the priest gets covered in flames too.
Well, because the tank explodes, and so some of that fuel hits the Reverend's face, I think.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Great setup for a sequel.
It is. And at this point,
we're not quite there yet. First, we've got Brian coming back and escaping and holding Dr. Meadows at gunpoint in the middle of town, in the middle of Main Street, telling everyone the truth about the blob.
Yep.
And well, then
and Dr. Meadows has a gun, too, for a while, because, I mean, it's all in a day's work as a scientist, I guess.
And then, of course, though, during that confrontation, Meadows gets killed by the blob.
Yeah, there's like great a crack in his suit or something, but the blob fills the entire spacesuit.
And then just pulls him down like a dummy.
Yeah, it's great.
Back into the sewer, yeah.
We haven't seen a military this incompetent since we did Godzilla. Like, because they're just like, well, I guess we can't. Whoop! Doctor's gone. Like, they have all the wrong tools. It's choice. It's really choice.
Well, from there, the rest of the military is just trying to help the townsfolk subdue the blob, along with, I guess, new Sheriff Emil. And he dies, too. He gets, like, pulled through a window and gets split in half.
Solid death.
Essentially, yeah.
And I guess at this point we have Reverend saying that he that this is the prophecy of the end of the world.
Yeah.
And
this is the apocalypse.
This has all been prophesized.
And at this point, that's when he gets set aflame. Meg saves his life with that fire extinguisher, but I think the blob is approaching and gets blasted with the cold of the fire extinguisher, and that's when we realize, oh yeah, the plot.
Oh yeah, the cold thing.
That's when they realize, oh yeah, it wouldn't go into the freezer, and now it's upset by the fire extinguisher. It's the cold. The cold is the weakness.
Yeah, and then we go back to the first act where Brian's trying to seek a job with the Deus Ex snowmobile. Because...
Oh yeah, that was a thing. The snowmaker thing from the first act.
Right. They were like, because we haven't established this enough, really, but it's still football, like early football season, so it's like September. And they're like, we need to get these snowmobiles up on the mountain so people will come out and ski. Not going to happen. But he's essentially trying to make some, you know, a few loose dollars by working as a mechanic, fixing up these snow machines.
Right, and then he drives one out, and they lure the blob over to this truck in order to make it explode, I believe, and with some of the grenades they swipe from the army, and the liquid nitrogen is supposed to kill the blob. And it works. There's some suspense about Meg getting trapped. Why is the grenades about to blow up near the near the truck?
The longest grenade explosion. Yeah.
Oh my god!
She's trapped for minutes. It's so funny.
Her sweater gets caught, or her back?
Her leg. Her leg gets caught on some strap or something.
That's what it is.
But like, she's never shot a gun in her life, but she grabs an AK. Some kind of gun.
To be fair, she's not the best handler of it.
No, she's really not. Yeah. She does shoot willy-nilly for a while, but she has sort of her Roy Scheider jaws moment where she's like, "Smile, you son of a whatever, you son of a bitch," and then shoots the tank. Mm-hmm. So.
And at that point, the blob turns into a geode.
Yep, a geode.
And shatters.
Beautifully, perfectly cut crystals. It's amazing. So beautiful.
And it's funny because it's clearly just an overlaid shot of some gems, and it's... But it works. It's totally fine.
I love it.
What do they do with these perfectly cut gems again? They put them in like a...
The town freezer. Ice house.
Yeah. What the hell is the town ice house?
There was an ending shot in the old blob where they literally dragged this thing on, like, I don't know, like a plane or something and dropped it in the Arctic.
So just to sound, for John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's kind of it. There's just like an ice house downtown, you know, the old timey ice house where you'd go bring your sweetie on a Saturday night, I guess. Who knows? Smash cut to years later, where Reverend Meeker, now disfigured with his burns, is giving like a tent revival to the service, and then goes backstage to his jar.
Well, I mean, he's talking about the end of the world, and he goes backstage, and one of the people in the congregation goes, "How long will it be before the end times?"
Soon, madam, soon.
He's basically like, waiting for what quote unquote God to give him a sign, and he's basically in control of ending the world because he's got a mini blob in the palm of his hands.
Now, this blob can dissolve flesh. Why can't it break out of the glass?
Maybe it's too small.
Didn't you see that episode of Breaking Bad where Walter told Pinkman to get a certain kind of plastic bag
right. And
to put the acid in the body parts in?
You're right.
Fair point.
So you're right. Saying what we need is the blob to be wearing a pork pie hat.
And, yes.
It would have been an awesome sequel.
Well, that was a big sequel setup for this, which unfortunately never came.
Box office bomb. Yeah, crime against humanity.
Bryan Cranston is out there making some pink meth.
Perfect pink crystals of meth.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, Bryan comes back, saves her. They presumably leave town together because... Again, this is another
because
family annihilation.
Because baby, we were born to run.
Yeah. but yeah, so this is the kind of... It's a shame we didn't get a sequel, but this is right on the nose.
But did it need a sequel, though?
No, absolutely not.
No.
But they set it up. It is
set it up.
It is a great way to end, like... If this movie's about anything, which it's not, but if it was, it's that the government is the bad guy here, right? And the government makes weapons... And it would be terrible if the weapons fell in the wrong hand. That's why we have it. But they always fall into the wrong hands, and this guy has it. Like, it's very funny. Like, they knew what they were doing, and they did a good job.
It goes from the government to a crazy religious fanatic. It's great.
Like on Cineprov, which should be out by now, we did Rambo 3. And Rambo 3 is Sylvester Stallone as Rambo helping out the Mujahideen.
Oh, yeah.
And at the end, it's dedicated to the brave men and women of the Mujahideen.
Oh, boy.
This came out almost the exact same year, 1988. It just, very on the nose. It's a shame when things we do gets in the hands of religious fundamentalists, isn't it?
Well, I mean, what did the Mujahideen ever do to... No, I'm
well, I think we covered this pretty good. Final thoughts. We'll come to you last since you brought it up. Jeremy?
Yeah, this is a great movie. The structure is tight. There's clever dialogue. The practical effects are amazing. And... Yeah, this is just great all around. It's not just a great remake, but a great movie on its own terms.
This really is a great remake. It's clever. It takes the original and doesn't try and pretend like it's a better idea, but it builds off of what the original did, like the whole twist about how the blob is a government weapon. These practical effects are wonderful. And yeah, I mean, it's not as good as like The Thing or The Fly, but I think it should be more fondly remembered as a great 80s horror remake.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is one of the best horror remakes I've ever seen. Honestly, it has some of the best practical gore effects there are, and it's definitely better than the original. And I really think that it very much takes the source material, makes it work for the time of the release. But, I know that The Thing and The Fly sort of get all of this credit for being these great 80s horror remakes, but nobody really mentions The Blob. And I think The Blob, although maybe not as good as those films, deserves to be remembered as sort of a staple horror remake. I think that it takes the source material and improves on it in almost every way. And I freaking love this movie. I mean, I grew up on it. I had to bring it up because nobody talks about it.
Well, I mean, and since we mentioned The Thing and The Fly... I would rather we watch this than The Fly. The Fly's a better movie. It's just a hard watch because it's so visceral. This is not. This is fun. This is a fun horror movie. I also don't know what genre I would say. It's like a metaphor movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's a metaphor horror running around, but it's not exactly a monster movie. It's not a slasher. There aren't a lot of movies like this. It's almost environmental horror in some ways. Practical effects look great. It's a lot of fun. Obviously, we all found it for this movie, but it's just not a movie that comes up that often, which is surprising, because all horror movies come back around, and maybe it's just that it didn't have 7 sequels, right? Like, you can't throw a stick without hitting a Freddy Krueger movie. You just can't, right? This movie, since it's kind of one and done, gets...
It's not like you hit your spoiled for choice with Kevin Dillon movies.
but in the end, yeah, totally recommend it. If you guys can find it, it's a good addition. It doesn't feel particularly Halloween-y, but there is something kind of, maybe the closest is Tremors. Like, small town, out of control, there's a very tight cast, people are just dying, and it's uncontrollable in a lot of ways. It's kind of fun that way. But anyway, I'd recommend it. Thanks for listening to our Halloween Horror Month. Stay tuned. If you're not on Patreon, Adam's Family Values is coming, and for November, we are, you know, doing some fun movies, but December is always Family Movie Month, so you got that to look forward to, too. So thanks for listening, subscribing, and reviewing wherever you get it. Bye, guys.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.